Hang him from the yard, arr.
Hey, Alex here, and I've got something new for you. We've been reviewing a lot more titles at Twig in recent months specifically, and it looks like it's going to be ramping up a lot more than it has in the past. So to accommodate everything, we can't fit everything on the one show. I have been talking with Birdman for a bit about maybe starting my own show, and I wasn't quite sure how we wanted to go about it. So it looks like anything that doesn't fit onto the main show review-wise will come onto this new Turd or Treasure show. I had come up with the Turd or Treasure idea about 3 or 4 months ago in that I wanted to make a show initially just about forgotten TV shows, let's say, that have never been on video before and maybe had less than a season or so in science fiction sort of genres, but it could have spread out to pretty much anything. So a show, let's say, like Space Rangers, where a DVD did eventually come out, but nobody's really heard about it, and was it any good? Was it ahead of its time? Could it have survived on its own now? And the idea behind that was take the show, watch the pilot, if you can obtain it, and then watch maybe the best critically acclaimed episode, or something that may have been notoriously bad that nobody wanted to see because it was horrible, and then review that. So watch that with one other person, or if I can't get anybody else, to do it on my own and just sort of give my thoughts on it. And that grew from there and thinking, well, now we're going to be getting a lot more reviews when it comes to media, specifically games. And we can't fit everything in that 1 hour, 1.5 hour span that Birdman wants to have for the main Twig flagship show. So this specifically today is going to be a soft pilot in that we don't have any special sound effects made for it yet. It doesn't have its own feed yet, but it's going to be there. We just wanted to test the waters, and plus we've got some stuff we wanted to have released that we really had no other method to, because it's going to get rolled back and rolled back each week. So now we're going to have something that at least once or twice a month I'll have a podcast with all of the reviews together. So are they turds? Are they treasure? You'll have to find out. So here's the breakdown of the show. All the Twig contributors are going to be sending in their reviews, anything that doesn't fit into the main show. We're going to have them interspliced between talking segments regarding the introductions of them, as well as maybe stories, as well as some features, specifically when I do special episodes that are on those forgotten TV shows that I personally love to find, as well as a couple extra features that I want to start throwing in. Everybody and their mother seems to have a review show or talking point show on the WWE on Wrestling. We've got already the Mayhem Mike segment that runs a couple times a month, which is the co-production with the GCRN, and that just focuses on WWE. Now, I know there are others that watch other programming as well, but I seem to be the only one in the Twig crew that is regularly involved in watching all forms of the wrestling world. So I watch pretty much everything. I'll watch, you know, the former TNA Impact Wrestling, especially now that it's Canadian-based. I watch Ring of Honor. I watch anything I can find from New Japan. I even watch some of the Mexican stuff, the Lucha Libre stuff, and I try to keep up on that. I don't always watch the super indie stuff, but if I hear about a match, I'll look it up. It's something where I would like to sort of make a roundup of sorts that explains what's been going on in the world and maybe what's going to come and influence the WWE, because they're basically being fed into the WWE, into NXT, from all these organizations. Plus, there can be exciting things going on in the wrestling world outside of the WWE, so I thought that would be something cool just to sort of give a few minute roundup of what's happened in the week and where things might be going. So for this show, what we've got for you is a review of The Witch and the Hundred Knight 2, brought to you by NAS America on the PlayStation 4 platform, as well as Penny Punching Princess, also from NAS America, which is released on the Nintendo Switch. Mr. Christopher also has a review of De Blob 2 for the PS4. And finally, from Birdman, we've got his review of the remastered edition of Assassin's Creed Rogue. As with any new show, there's going to be some growing pains as we go, and editing will change, things will be tighter, we're going to have more segments involved with maybe music and whatnot. But enough of me babbling, so let's just get into the first review. So right now, coming up is Witch and the Hundred Knight 2.
Hey, Alex here, and I've got a review of The Witch and the Hundred Knight 2, developed by Nippon Ichi Software and published by NAS America for the Sony's PlayStation 4 platform. It's released March 27th in North America and March 30th in Europe, so by the time you hear this, it's just been released. It's retailing for about $50 American and about $65 or so Canadian if you go retail. digital it might be different and depends on what store promotions you have going on. Anywho's, the game synopsis for this is if you follow the Hundred Knight in its journey through a witch-ravaged world. So basically, it's a world where there's a witch disease that's affecting young girls that they get a third eye on their forehead. And if it opens up, they get possessed by a witch and become these horrible destroyers that just want chaos and murder and horrible things. Basically, it's very, very bad. Young girls are contracting the illnesses. Now, there is sort of a pseudo, I guess it would be plague doctors that find a way to remove. They're exorcist in a sense, but they're using it as if it's medical science to get rid of the eye before it opens. But if it opens, basically you're screwed. And the game follows two sisters, Amelie and Milm. Amelie is a girl that ends up becoming sort of I guess it's a witch hunter. I don't want to give too much of the plot away because this game is all about plot. And Milm is this little sister that basically has her third eye open. She becomes a witch. And who you actually control in the game is the Hundred Knight. The Hundred Knight is a little stuffed doll that has sort of been imbued with spiritual energy, and it does all the fighting. So it's a really weird sort of environment. It's very, 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 very NIS America, which I've come to know now has become the quirky, weird, funny RPG company. Now, graphics-wise, hands down, the cutscenes are hilarious and awesome and very vibrant. They are done in a still frame style that you see in most RPGs that are from Japan where you have sort of the still pictures pop up. The pictures are manipulated to move, the mouse move a little bit, and then you hear them talk. But this game is fully voice acted through all those scenes, and it brings the world to life in that they don't have to put a lot of CGI cutscenes in there. They're very colorful. The characters are all unique and different. The dungeons have a top-down isometric view with just enough color and variation to keep you interested. Music and sound. The music fits the tone of the game. It's pretty full of life. It doesn't overwhelm you. It's not this grand sweeping surround sound soundtrack. It's exactly what it needs to be for this game. The sound design is very simple and effective. The sound effects for hitting things or whatnot are very effective and what they need to be, right on point. The voice acting is where this game shines. The voice actors clearly had a fun time working with the script and went 110% in into whatever wacky character they had. To give you an idea, there's an anthropomorphic, cross-dressing, effeminate crow butler. Really? Like, need I say any more? It's a butler that has its little crow babies in its, I guess, around its neck in like a necklace. And it's as over the top as you could imagine. The controls and the gameplay for this game, during cutscenes, you advance the story by listening to and making choices. Like, you agree, you're told, Hundred Knight, go do this. You can agree, disagree. It basically does the same thing. It just sort of changes how they react to you. But the meat and potatoes of the gameplay in here is the dungeon crawling. You control the Hundred Knight, and there's very deep customization involved. So as you fight, you gain levels. Well, when you gain levels, you can apply certain points to your skills, which like you can in most RPGs, except in doing that, you increase the certain stats that affect how your moveset works. You equip up to 5 weapons at a time, different types. You can have swords, you can have spears, you can have hammers, and the order in which you equip them affects how you attack. So when you do a combo, you hit the attack button 5 times, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That affects the type of moves you do. If you have swords, they're quick. If you have hammers, they're very slow, but they hit a lot of enemies for more damage. And the order that you put them in depends on what sort of move they do and how they affect the surrounding area. You can have weapons that have buffs and debuffs, so weapons that do poison damage or have a orb of energy that'll splash and hit other enemies. It's very, very deep that way. I'm not even going to go into all the details there because it's very deep as far as dungeon crawlers and roguelikes go. You also have, when your inventory system is your stomach, so you basically absorb loot from enemies or from chests that you find around the dungeons. And at the end of the dungeon is when you can basically you spit them up, I guess, and you get to keep them. If you're in the dungeon and you run out of stamina, which is a counter that's always slowly going down, it can be increased by killing certain enemies or performing special moves on enemies. But if it hits 0 and you die, you lose all the items in your belly and you have to start over. if you lose to an enemy, let's say you fall in battle, and you still have stamina, it'll take stamina away and take one or two items away from your inventory. So it does punish you for, you know, being careless. But as long as you're diligent and you work your way through and you grind through, you'll be fine. You'll be able to keep all these cool items and move on to the next area. And if you kill named enemies, which are the larger enemies that obviously have a name, you get better, rarer loot. So there's always an incentive to keep exploring and do everything in the level. That being said, this is going to take a while for you to beat because it is a very grind-heavy game. It's a dungeon crawler, it's a roguelike, so if for anybody that's played those, you know what to expect. Now, outside of battle, you're in your town or your little castle and you can interact, you can morph, alchemy, you can make new items, you can buy items, you can sell items. There's that sort of thing to do, and then you can warp to different levels as you go. So there's always a world hub you can go back to if you want to just tweak around with your settings and whatnot. Now, bosses in this game are difficult. It is a hard game. There's no getting around it. I won't sugarcoat it. If you just rush through, you will get your ass handed to you. So you've got to make sure that you're willing to go in and beat the swarms of enemies in you know, action gameplay. You can take on multiple enemies at once. You can do splash damage. There's a lot of cool stuff. So that is where you are going to find the majority of the fun in the game, which is just beating up tons of enemies, powering up your character, and then just going in and putting the smack down on whatever boss you're fighting. So learn the boss's pattern, play to your strengths, beat the boss up, move on to the next part of the game. I would say, as far as my final thoughts on the game, if you love dungeon crawlers and roguelikes with quirky characters and hilarious voice acting, then you're going to like The Witch and the Hundred Knight 2. I recommend to buy if you're a hardcore fan of those types of genres and games. But if you're on the fence, I'd, you know, still say check it out when you get a chance, maybe when it's on sale, check it out with a friend. It's definitely, I wouldn't say it's a rental because rentals don't really exist anymore, but it's better than a rental. We don't go with a grading system here. We go with either do we like it, do we not like it, buy it now. I say buy it now if you're into the style of game, but definitely check it out eventually.
Do you have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Hold that thought. It's crapper time.
Alrighty, that was awesome. So, moving right along to the next game, right now we've got Penny Punching Princess, also from me!
Alright people, Alex here, and I have a review of Penny Punching Princess, brought to you by Nippon Ichi Software, published by NIS America, released on the Nintendo Switch. Was originally going to be released in March, but it looks like it was pushed forward to an April 3rd release in North America and in Europe around the same time. Now, I know in UK they just announced that they're not doing a physical release for whatever reason. They've had some issues with their supply chain, but as far as that's concerned, their digital is going to be out on time. So it's priced at about $40 US and about 55 Canadian. As far as the game's synopsis is concerned, it's a world ruled by capitalism where cash is king. You use money you gather to bribe enemies to fight for you, activate deadly traps with your dough, and when all else fails, smash all that stands in your way with your fist. Fight your way from nothing and amass treasures to take on the mighty Dragon Loan family, actually. It was the Dragon Clan Dragon Loan family. Now, you recruit and buy the flunkies, that enemies that you beat, which you can use to make stronger equipment, and yada, yada, yada. That's the basic premise of it. I'll tell you what, in my own words, I believe it to be. It is a dungeon crawler that you beat up enemies with, where you hit them one by one a little bit, and it does like one or two damage each. So you can beat a few enemies, you get some money, and then you bribe the other enemies so you don't have to fight them. That's the whole point of the game. The graphics are really cutesy, retro RPG-inspired sprites, a la, let's say, PS1 era, but very clean and in HD. The cutscenes are vibrant, where they just expand those sprites. It's very, I get a very Sega vibe from it. I know it's NIS America and Nippon Ichi Software, but it has that very Dreamcast era of Sega weirdness quality to it, if you know what I mean. The world feels very colorful and very unique, which, you know, I keep saying unique when it comes to Nippon Ichi stuff, but it pretty much is. It's a very, very interesting world. The music is very simplistic. It's very run-of-the-mill, this sort of game. It's very not in your face. It's sort of in the background. It just keeps the game moving forward with its sort of cutesy aesthetic. Now, the narrator is the only thing that's really spoken, other than just maybe mumbles of the enemies and whatnot. The narrator is very, very good at filling the tone and setting the whole space for the game. The controls are pretty tight. I was playing it with a pro controller, and you basically move around a screen, and a wave of enemies will hit you, and you beat them up, get coins, and use the coins to bribe them, or use the coins to turn on or off the traps and environmental effects around you. So if there is a turret attacking you, you can pay the turret to only attack the enemies or not work at all. You can bribe a fence to open for you that lets you go to a secret area to get more money. You can bribe even the lava pits to turn off. You can even bribe these other little, it looks like potholes, that when you open them up, that gives you your healing points to heal, because you don't really get to use items in battle. The whole game is based on how much money do you need to spend and how much money do you need to get. So you beat up some enemies, you do combos on them, get extra coins, and then there's a calculator on your screen. And when an enemy comes at you that you want, and you're like, oh, screw it, I'm not going to beat this guy, it's going to take me forever punching him, you calculate how much it's going to cost to bribe him, you bribe him, and he disappears. And you can use them to unleash later on other enemies, or you save them and they go back to your base, your castle, and can be used to create new weapons and items in their sort of an alchemy system. So it's pretty cool when you go up to a boss or a mini boss and you go, oh, I don't want to beat you, here's $2,000, and you spend it, and they're instantly, you win because you didn't have to fight them at all. So that's basically, the whole game hinges on this aspect of, it's, if you want to fight, it's going to make a lot more sense just to pay them off, because fighting will take forever, because they'll have, let's say, 200 HP and you do one damage per hit. So you're going to keep hitting 200 times, or you can do a combo, a special move, knock them out, steal some of their money, bribe them off with the money you just stole from them. So it's pretty unique. I've never encountered a game anything like this actually at all. So I would say that in itself is worth checking out. As far as difficulty goes, Penny Punching Princess is pretty challenging, but it's still very enjoyable. If you die or your time runs out, you can always come back and try the levels again over and over until you get it right. And once you get a layout for that level, it's a lot easier to figure out where the spawn points are for the enemies to beat. So I would say if you die, try at least one or two more times and you'll win. So each level is not very long. You get about a 5-10 minute time limit, I believe, to beat it. So as far as my final thoughts on this, if you're into dungeon crawlers and roguelikes, you'll likely enjoy the game. It's very quirky. The levels taking only about 5 minutes to beat make it perfect for the Switch, because you can just take it on the bus or take it on the go and work on your break at work or at school or in transit for 5 to 10 minutes at a time, and it just saves the game and move on. I would say it's very, very, very cool and unique, and something you'd want to check out on the Switch. So it's highly recommended. Check it out, well, right now.
Okay, so those are my two reviews for this episode. Coming up next, we've got Mr. Christopher's review of The Blob 2 on the PS4, and right after that, we're going to have a special look at Assassin's Creed Rogue. Birdman had a chance to check that out, and you know how much of a big Assassin's Creed fan he is, so stay tuned and listen in for that.
Now, I'm not usually one to play a platformer, unless you stick the name Mario on it, but The Blob 2 manages to capture enough of that magic to provide its fair share of silly entertainment. The Blob 2 was originally released back in 2011 on the previous generation of systems, including the PS3, the 360, Wii, and a sort of side story for DS. That's right, DS, not 3DS. It continues the adventures of Blob, an aptly named creature of nondescript form that can absorb paint and use it to color the buildings and people of the various regions and cities you encounter, saving them from the evil Comrade Black, who aims to rule a world devoid of all color. The gameplay is fairly simple, using only a few of the buttons available on this generation of consoles, and your objectives are always easy to find, with the aid of an in-game compass pointing you to where you need to go. Your tasks vary a little, but generally involve absorbing paint of a certain color and using it to paint something. Your knowledge of the color wheel will come in handy as you mix the primary colors together to hit those pesky purple, orange, green, and brown targets. The game tosses you into 2D scrolling sections to vary it up, and these sections are usually where the puzzle element shows up strongest. The game does have an assortment of enemies, though they're minimally threatening, as all of them are easily dispatched by the targeted stomping and charging that's admittedly quite addictive once you get the hang of it. The true enemies of The Blob 2 are water and time. Water washes off any color you've absorbed, which can be a pain when you're struggling to stay purple and the nearest source of blue paint is halfway across the level. As for time, it'll sneak up on you as the game progresses. A timer sits at the top of the screen, ominously counting down the seconds you have left to complete the level. You can pick up extra time by completing certain bonus challenges through the levels, but sometimes getting stuck in a puzzle can suddenly find you worrying about the incessant dwindling clock. When you finish the level, you get to explore and complete more challenges to earn inspiration without worrying about a timer. You can use inspiration to buy upgrades like extra lives or increase how much paint you can carry. This bit of freedom is a nice break from the subtle pressure of the rest of the game and gives you a chance to paint the rest of the level and rack up your score. The only issues I encountered involved jumps and wall riding feeling a little sticky, and a few rare camera issues, but these weren't big enough to detract from the overall experience. The story is told through wordless cutscenes at the beginning of each level, and you'll read short blurbs of exposition as you accept each mission throughout the levels. It's a simple story, and not very deep, but it's injected with enough humor to get a few genuine chuckles. Visually, the game is vibrant, which is good since the entire game revolves around painting cities and landscapes 7 different colors. It's a bit hard to understand what you're looking at for the first few minutes, but once you get used to it, it's easy to pick up each new concept the game introduces. The audio design is cleverly tied into the gameplay. A subtle beat plays in the background until you start painting, which will bring in some jazzy music to give your painting a little bit more punch. The characters you encounter also make some noise, but they only speak in gibberish. Dablob 2 is a game that's easy to play with your brain turned down low. The puzzles are challenging enough to be interesting, but you won't be throwing your arms up in frustration. It's a fun game that just wants you to sit back and enjoy what it has to offer, and it's aged well since its original release in 2011. That said, if you played it back then, there really isn't any reason to pick it up again now. It's the same game you remember. If you haven't played it before and are looking for something lighthearted, pick it up and paint the town red, or whatever color you like. My reviews sum up with the answer to one question. Do I like it? So Dablob 2, do I like it? Yes. It's cute, it's fun, and I'm glad I played it, and I think you will be too. I'm Mr. Christopher on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Those magnificent bastards!
Color me kooky, but something very odd is going on around here.
You're not allowed to talk anymore.
Hey guys, we are checking out Assassin's Creed Rogue Remastered on the PlayStation 4, coming to us from Ubisoft. Assassin's Creed Rogue is one of those games that was actually ported over from the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 4 recently, and it's one of those, like the title says, a remaster, kind of updating the graphics, maybe fixing a few things here and there. And well, this port, it's not bad. I gotta say, Assassin's Creed Rogue is probably one of my favorite entries in the Assassin's Creed series, simply because I really like the protagonist, Shay Patrick Cormac, who is an assassin turned Templar. Basically, what would cause him to turn his back on the Assassin's Creed Brotherhood? Well, I don't want to spoil too much storyline-wise, although this game has been around for a while, but basically it boils down to precursor artifacts, what's right, what's wrong, and more or less, how do you justify the actions that the Brotherhood takes? Are the Templars necessarily the bad guys? Well, that all comes down to, as you may guess it, a certain point of view. And this is probably one of the more interesting Assassin's Creed games, simply because you do get to see the other side of the conflict. And I am immensely interested in almost all the side characters here. Like, there's just some really cool people. Even the assassins that you end up fighting, like Lady Hope, Kiyowase, who is one of the few Native American characters I've seen in video games, I guess other than Connor Kenway himself from Assassin's Creed 3. But enough about that. You may be asking, is this port worth the money? And this is where it gets kind of tricky. If you buy this game on PC, you do have the option to get a quote-unquote digital collector's edition, which does give you the upgrade pack, the collectibles pack, some additional customization options, which you could have bought via DLC for an extra couple of bucks on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. However, on the PS4 and Xbox One versions, these options are noticeably absent. I typically bought these things to save myself some time, simply because sometimes the grind in these games is not all that fun, to go hunting for items in the North Atlantic or going to find lost Viking artifacts. I wanted my maps, I wanted my gear, I wanted my head start. And that's one thing I've always liked about the Assassin's Creed games. You don't have to do it, but if you're willing to pay a few bucks, you can get an option to jump yourself ahead a couple of hours if you want to do it without spoiling any of the storyline. So, One thing that did happen, I did notice this happen during my particular playthrough, is I did have a number of different camera issues happen with this game, where the camera would get locked, the camera would move, and I'd have to die and reset simply for things to start moving again. Once the game re-instanced itself from the world, things worked fine, but it was something I did notice happening to me more and more as I progressed through this game. So, the final answer, is Assassin's Creed Rogue worth your time and money? Well, if you didn't play it originally on the Xbox 360 and PS3 or the PC, then yeah, I think it's a fantastic game. It's definitely an integral part of the storyline if you want to understand how the future games start to work, especially with some of the events and some of the characters, how they all interconnect. It's a well worth its story. In fact, like I said, you won't look at the Templars quite the same way again. But if you've already played this game on the PS3 and Xbox 360, you can probably safely skip this one, because odds are you probably already have all the chivos and all the trophies for it. And that's my opinion right here on Turd or Treasure.
Okay, so you came to the end of the show. That's it. We've got nothing else for you right now. So as soon as we get more stuff in and there's more reviews coming, you'll have a new review show. Now, I can say this. It's going to be at least once or twice a month. Eventually, we're probably going to hit something like a weekly thing. That's the goal. If you'd like to leave any feedback or any ideas for the show itself, feel free to email me, alex@thisweekingeek.net, feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Hit us up on Twitter, @TurtleTreasure, or, of course, @thisweekingeek. All right, people. See you later.
Okay, son. Now you're starting to scare the viewers.
Just act normal.
I'd ask you to do the same, but I'm afraid that ship has sailed.
Why are there so many ostriches?
But you have a game that is dipped in the
ropey, thick, window cocking.
So guys, we'll be right back right here on This Week in Geek, only on thisweekingeek.net and many other sites where I syndicate this crap, because I'm a media slut.
I like turtles.
Loose like your mom.
That's right.
No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to?
Me likey tater tots.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content, and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at @ThisWeekInGeek. And check out our Instagram at @Twig_official_podcast. And if you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time. And remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
You have no idea how many takes it took me to get this thing recorded. I had me the shitty guts. I had to poop like every 10 seconds.